I appreciate you taking the time to call, and I sure understand you're a busy man. I guess you teach as well, right?
Yes, I've been teaching for the last several years. I've kind of been transitioning into academia, and I published a book called The Citizen Kane Crash Course in Cinematography, which is available at www.amazon.com. And I've been teaching at Chapman University and USC and UCLA, and also Chapman in Singapore for a year last year. So I'm kind of getting into the passing on to the next generation all of the lessons I've learned groove.
Well, that's very good. In fact, what we'll do for this podcast, we always have a link to Amazon because we have a deal with them. We have a cooperation with them. So I'll make sure that your book is linked for Amazon to the site for this podcast. How's that sound?
Thank you, Gino. Appreciate it.
Hey, no, I appreciate you taking the time. Listen, before we go any further, I just wanted to ask if it's okay if we're recording this, because we're going to do this as a podcast on the site. Is that all right with you?
Absolutely. 100%.
Okay. Well, listen, of course, the reason that we're talking is the Warrior of the Lost World has been released on the Mystery Science Theater 3000 discs. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about you and some of your background. And I think a lot of our listeners will be curious as to how you got started in the film industry. What's your background in the biz is?
Well, it goes way, way back to high school when I was kind of overwhelmed when I had to watch the screening of Citizen Kane on television. This is way back in the dark ages when it was a very small screen and all littered with commercials and all that good stuff. But I got it, and that kind of started my my trek toward toward studying filmmaking. And I went to UCLA way, way back in the day and studied film, but never really graduated. I just got into the street and started hustling films. And after about 7 or 8 years of working out of the back of an Econoline van, just making a lot of forgettable little action-adventure movies or movies in the streets, I was fortunate enough to, some of my work got recognized by Clint Eastwood, and I was the director of photography on two of his films, Bronco Billy and Any Which Way You Can. So that was kind of my I began as a cinematographer and editor, mainly to make myself a better director.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you a question. What are the influences? It sounds like Citizen Kane was a big influence, both in the name of your book and what you just described. Is that a big influence in your love for cinema?
Yeah, that was a huge influence. Citizen Kane was a huge influence in my love for cinema. And then when I was in the 60s and 70s, when I was kind of working on my own and starting to get my feet wet in the film business, the films that really influenced me were the Italian neorealists and the French New Wave, and all the European filmmakers, from Godard and Truffaut to Fellini and Ingmar Bergman, and all of that body of the films. I envisioned myself growing up and being an art house filmmaker. And then by the time I actually started working professionally, it seems that the art house had kind of withered and gone away, and I was out doing whatever I could find that would come across my desk to do, including martial arts and futuristic action adventures in Rome.
Wow. And I do notice in your credits that you've done a lot of different things behind the camera, from directing to writing to editing to cinematography. What do you enjoy doing the most? If you had your choice, just pick one and excel at that, what would you do?
Well, the whole reason why it reads that way is because I fell in love with the process of filmmaking.
Sure.
I loved filmmaking, and from the concept to the composite print, I really fell in love with the whole process, and it didn't matter to me what I was doing. If I was working in pre-production and doing casting and crewing and doing budgets and schedules and preparing to go and shoot the movie, that was great. If I was shooting or editing the movie, that was great. And if I was following it on through post-production and doing the titles and opticals and sound mix, that was great. I loved the whole process, and probably that's the reason why you find so many of those different categories by my name.
Well, no, I think that's a good thing. I think that probably those experiences helped you when you did go off to direct on your own. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. No, in fact, whenever I talk to young filmmakers now, I tell them what you really need if you want to become a writer-director is make sure that you get some time behind the camera and in the editing room. Because you need to know the lenses, you need to know what the lenses will do to help you tell the story, and you need to know the camera, and you need to know the pieces of the scene that you need to make it work in the editing room. And of course, nowadays, it's 1,000% simpler than when I was coming up back in the day, because now you can literally take your high-def camera out on the weekend and shoot a bunch of stuff with your friends and put it together, edit it together on your Final Cut Pro on your laptop,
right.
Snap out a DVD and send it off and become Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, we've had a few of those over the years, haven't we?
Yeah, and so I find that really refreshing, and I try to all the students I deal with, I try to preach that new paradigm that's out there of how much simpler it is to make a movie now than it was, a few years ago, because of the access we have to all the newest modes of capture and delivery.
Well, I assume it's not just the access. I assume it's also the economics of the issues. The studios are tightening their belts, and when you can make a movie for $11,000 like Paranormal Activity and put it out there, that's got to be enticing as well.
And have it make $100 million.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
And I tell all my students again, I say, look, I hope you all, when you graduate, you all get a call from Steven Spielberg or one of the other major producers in town, and you do a big, $50 million movie. But if that doesn't happen, you should understand that today, you can become an entrepreneurial filmmaker. You can spend a few thousand dollars on a wonderful high-def camera, a few more thousand on Final Cut Pro and an editing system on your computer, and basically you are now a studio and you can greenlight your own projects.
Yeah. Does all that make you wish sometimes you were born a little bit too early? Do you wish you were coming up in this kind of environment now?
I tell every class I envy you guys where you are now and what you have at your disposal, because it's so much easier. Back in the day, we had to buy short ends. We had to shoot negative and process and print negative. We had to shoot a separate soundtrack, transfer that to 16 or 35, sync that all up, have every frame of it coated with ink, then do all the editing, then do all the negative cutting, then do all the titles and opticals, and 3 months later, you might have a short subject to show.
Absolutely. Listen, if you don't mind, let's head over to Warrior of the Lost World. And the first thing I wanted to ask you about is not only did you direct the film, but you also wrote the script, the story. And I wanted to ask you, where did this idea come from? How did this evolve?
Well, I was here in Los Angeles, and I was putting together some treatments, and I put together one that I called High Plains Drifter on a Motorcycle. I had seen Clint Eastwood's movie High Plains Drifter, which I loved.
Yeah.
And I updated it to the future, where a guy rides out of the heat waves on the highway on a high speed motorcycle, comes into town, finds the bad guys, rights all the wrongs, kisses the girl, rides out of town. And I was pitching it to a producer friend of mine. It was actually Sandy Howard who did the. He was a very famous producer back in the day, and he said, "Well, call my friend Ed Sarlouis, who's looking for a film to do in Europe like that." So I called him and I said, "Hi, so and so asked me to call you. Sandy Howard asked me to call you, and here's my concept." And so I said, "It's that guy rides out of the heat waves and he rights all the wrongs and rides back on his motorcycle, into the heat waves on the highway." And the producer said, "Put it in the future." And I said, "Fine, it's in the future." He said, "How would you like to direct that film in Rome?" So this is literally the fastest project that has ever come together in my life and maybe in the history of filmmaking. And I literally pitched him the idea on Tuesday, went into his office on Wednesday, signed a contract, got a down payment, put it in the bank, took a plane to Rome on Friday, and Saturday was scouting locations for the film.
Wow, it doesn't happen like that much in the studio system anymore, does it?
It never happens like that in any system that I've been a part of. I mean, it's usually you get lost in what they call development hell, and people buy each other a lot of rounds of coffee and salads and sandwiches and discuss the film, and it goes to a committee and it comes back and you do a draft and you do another draft. And I've done this with films, just trying to do a TV series or just trying to do a spinoff or a movie from a TV series.
Sure.
And months and months go by and nothing, and then often everybody just walks away from it. So to have this happen this quickly was quite refreshing.
Now, what about the casting of the film? Were any of these actors in your mind when you were developing this script, and how involved were you in this casting?
The casting was done while I was in Rome prepping the film. It's so strange. The film was basically, I think I covered this in my interview, but the film was I did like a 45-page treatment of the film.
Right.
And when the producer was out of town doing his producing business, when he came into town, I said, "Would you like to read the treatment?" He said, "No, read it to me." So I sat down and read it to him, and he sat and listened to it, and at the end he said, "Okay, make the film." I said, "Wait, it's only 45-page treatment. Wouldn't you like me to turn this into a 90-page script?" He said, "No, just go make the film." So I turned the 45-page script into 220 pages of hand-drawn storyboards that I passed out to all the departments because many of the people didn't speak English.
Right.
And we used that comic book as our Bible for making the movie.
So again, the
casting was happening during the time I was doing all of that. And I think that it happened in Los Angeles. I really wasn't involved in it. They would send me a list of there's this and this and this person available who's willing to come here and to spend a month in Rome with no script and work with a young director because, you know, they need to make some bucks. And Robert Ginty and Persis Cavada and Donald Pleasence were all cast that way. Fred Williamson was in Rome doing a film, and I met him at a party, and he heard what I was doing, and he said, "Please cast me in your film so I can spend a few more weeks in Rome." I said, "Fine, you're in the film."
Yeah, and you know, speaking of that, and you did address this a little bit on your DVD interview, that the idea that the IMDb for some reason gives him this co-directing credit, which you've addressed as being total bullcrap. But let me ask you a question. Do you know how that happened? Was that him that made that claim? Do you know how that even got started?
I have absolutely no idea, and I love Fred. I've seen him for years and years after we did the film at the film markets every year, so I've got nothing against Fred. If you may have said it, in a moment of wanting to pump up his career, I don't know if he said it or if he didn't say it, and I don't really care. I just know that it wasn't true.
Yeah, like I said, that it was something you addressed. I was just curious as to whether you ever thought about trying to set that record straight.
Well, yeah, I've set it straight on. I've set it straight if anybody asked me about it. It's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I was there making the film. I wrote the film. I storyboarded the film. I directed the film. And Fred was hired to be an actor in the film. And he approached me to be in the film. So, I mean, that's how it happened. That was the long and short of it.
Cool. Well, let me ask you another question about the film. Doing all the filming in Rome, how different was that than your experiences working here in the States?
Well, it wasn't that far removed. The Roman team I had, even though it was a small, very small film and very fairly inexpensive film, they were all professionals. My producer was actually working at the same time in being the Italian producer on Lady Hawk that was being done in Rome at the time, which was a huge film by Richard Donner. So,
right.
But it was not it wasn't a large film, but everyone was very professional, and they make they've been making a lot of films in Rome all the way back to Ben-Hur and all the spaghetti westerns.
Right.
And so they were a very accomplished, very international group of filmmakers, and I had a great time with them. I would go back there in an instant.
Do you speak Italian?
only enough to swear and order food.
So I imagine there must have been a little bit of a language barrier, or were they pretty good with their English?
Well, I actually had a translator. I hired a girl who was there in Rome who was who spoke English and Italian very well. She was she had knew nothing about the film business, but she worked as my assistant and went everywhere and translated to everyone for me, because that was the situation back in the day. There weren't that many people who spoke English. My director of photography spoke English. My editor spoke English. Roberto Bessi, my producer, spoke English. And Frank Hildebrand, who was one of the producers, the line producers, spoke English. Frank was, in fact, a European who worked in America, so he spoke perfect English. But I had enough of a core unit speaking English so that we got everything that we wanted to get across.
That's great. Well, now, like I said, we're talking about this because it appeared now in the Mystery Science Theater 3000. Have you seen that episode that worked with your movie?
I loved it. Yes, I just went online and I Googled Warrior of the Lost Work, and that came up, and I watched the first 15 minutes of the film with them riffing on it and just was laughing my ass off at it. I thought it was so spectacular, all the jokes they came up with at my and the film's expense. But you know, if you can't laugh at yourself, then, you know, become a proctologist.
Yeah, it is all in good fun. But I got to tell you, I have spoken to people who weren't happy about having them lampoon their work. And so it shows a good spirit to realize that was all in good fun. And it was great entertainment.
Great entertainment. I mean, they found things. You know, I wasn't making a comedy, by the way. Even as ridiculous as it looked, I wasn't making a comedy. And to have them take it as that and put in their own words as that was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I thought they did a great job. In fact, they flew me back to Minneapolis for a some kind of a convention, and they screened different films, and we all stood up at the podium and answered questions, and I had a great time.
Well, that's great. Plus, you also have to look at the fact that this opens up your film to exposure to people who probably would not have in any other way found it.
Very true, and I've gotten several dozen, because on the interview I asked for people to contact me at my email address, davidworthfilm@gmail.com, when they see it, because I had never heard anything from any people who had seen it on MSG3K, and I was happy to have I've had a few dozen people already comment and how much they enjoyed it and enjoyed the interview and thought it was pretty cool that I was laughing at it. So.
Yeah, well, it certainly looks like that you could have a lot of fun with that. So what currently are you working on? What kind of projects are you having in the oven here?
Well, I'm actually working on another book called, its working title is Milestones in Cinema, and where I'm tracing the history of all of the films that were outside-the-box thinking movies from D.W. Griffith's 1916 film Intolerance all the way down through Diving Bell and the Butterfly. Films that were not commercial films, but films that were expanding the language and art of cinema in an exciting way, and films that were landmarks as far as breaking new ground.
Well, when can we look for that book?
Hopefully sometime next year. I'm working on that, and I'm doing my teaching, and I have a couple of other, I have scripts that I'm polishing. I might be going, I'm happy to go out any place on the planet and do, I have a master class that I teach in cinematography and another master class that I teach in directing, and I might be going to Malaysia this year to do that. I'm happy to go anywhere at any time to teach these master classes in cinematography and in directing, in which we use a lot of the milestones in cinema films as reference during these courses.
Well, that sounds like a great plan, and it sounds like you really got your head in the right direction about this passing it on to another generation. What I have heard someone express, setting the elevator back down.
That's it. That's it. I mean, you know, I've had a very long run as a filmmaker, as a cinematographer, an editor, and a director, and naturally, I wanted to go on and on and on forever. But that's not the hand of cards that you get dealt, and being a realist and having made so many films in so many parts of the world where it was really rough sledding, I deal with whatever hand I happen to be dealt at the time. So the hand I've been dealt over the last several years is in the world of academia, and I'm loving it and making that work.
Well, that sounds phenomenal, and I really do want to thank you for taking the time to join us. I'll have to look out for the book that's out and the other one as well, and maybe I'll get a chance to talk about that on the site as well after I get a hold of it and read it. I wasn't aware of the book, and I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, the first one that's already out is The Citizen Kane Crash Course in Cinematography, How Orson Welles Learned Everything About the Art of Cinematography in Half an Hour, or Was It a Weekend?
Well, I am really looking forward to reading that, and like I said, I am very grateful for you taking the time from your schedule to join us, and I appreciate you answering our questions.
My pleasure, Gino. I'm happy to be in touch with you anytime. Feel free to call, email me if you'd like to discuss anything else, and I'm available.
I absolutely would, and I thank you again for your time. It's really been a pleasure to talk to you.